Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one on your phone to ask a question. I would now like to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Denise. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. Well, some of the challenge is having a massive conference call, all of us being home. So thank you for hanging in there with us, and thank you for all the work I know is going into all of the elections this year. It's an unprecedented time, as you know. So thank you, and let's start by just talking about where we are. And I know I've worked with many of you now for a better part of a decade and even longer. And so knowing so many of you, I know that we need to work together on this. It is a challenge, but I think we're up for it. And I know that a lot of you, and myself as well, feel that we take on a position of trust when we take on these offices and that we believe to our core in American democracy. We're mothers, we're husbands, we're grandparents, we're people with families we love, and we're concerned for the health and safety of our loved ones in this time of such a crisis. And so elections are the core function of our democracy, and we as election officials must carry on, even in states of emergency like today. No voter should have to choose between his or her health and his or her right to vote. There are still big unknowns right now. We don't know where the country will be or the state will be in 1 month, 2 months, or even tomorrow. And one thing I'm finding out is there are no simple answers. So let me just tell you where we are right now, what we do know, and the kinds of questions that we will attempt to answer today because we've been working with all of you. I have worked in consultation and communication with state, local, and federal officials, as well as secretaries of state across the country. We're in communication with the Department of Homeland Security, the Centers for Disease Control, the Office of the Governor, and all executive agencies of state government. And we have also met and been in communication with the leadership of the Connecticut Town Clerks and ROVAC. So the purpose of the call today is to expand the communication, collaboration that's been taking place, to update you on the latest information we have, and to hear from you about the challenges you're facing and help all of us do our duty to the best of our ability working together. So we know today that some elections, and fortunately it's a presidential preference primary, which gives us a little bit of flexibility on some aspect of how we approach things with this election. We know some of those elections are moving forward without delay. We know in some places officials are moving election dates or considering moving election dates. So as you probably know, each state has slightly different considerations, different dates of their primaries, different laws and processing regarding who can vote at home or by mail. Some states are definitely moving forward. I'm told today that Rhode Island is one of those, even though their election is on the same date as ours, April 28th. On the other hand, an hour ago, I heard that the state of Maryland, which also has a primary on April 28th, is moving their election and delaying it since going forward. So we're in discussions with all the relevant agencies to think through what the results would be. The good news is, again, we have flexibility. It's kind of ironic, I think, that the late date of our primary, which has been seen up till now as maybe too late to be relevant, gives us more time to plan. One thing we know is that the election will take place. We are thinking through if the date of the election might change. But, of course, merely changing the date may not mean that things are any better for an election 1 month later or 2 months later. It could even mean that more people will require absentee ballots, for example. Maybe more people will be sick. We simply don't know. So for that and many other reasons, we should all prepare as if the election will be on April 28th. Preparation is the key. Know your emergency plan. Know your backup staffing. Know how many ballots you need and where. We have received lists of questions that your organizations have put forward for consideration. Some of them involve overriding statutes with certain election process requirements. We will answer what we can at this time, given the uncertainties. In this way, we can all do our best to do our duty and do right by the people we serve, the people we care for, and the mission we all share in common. My mind is open on these questions, and I look forward to hearing from you and working with you through this time together. And I'm sure together we can make this all work in the best possible way for the voters of the state. So with that, I will turn this over now to our chief attorney, Ted Bromley. Most of you know Ted, been working in our office for many years. And we have taken the questions that you have asked and some others that we are asking ourselves to try to come up with some answers as soon as possible. As you know, we don't even get the ballot prepared until next week. Monday is the date on which we decide who is still in these races. And there are some candidates we still have not heard from withdrawing their names from the initial ballot call. So by Tuesday, we will have to have a ballot ready, and we're going to proceed at this point until I work more thoroughly with the governor and some other states. We're going to proceed as if the election is going forward because we all have to prepare for that in any event. So with that, thank you all. I know there's a lot of questions out there and a lot of things that we need to address if we're going to go forward with a smooth election. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ted to address some of the questions we've heard about. And then after that, we'll have a discussion where everyone will be able to ask questions if you go through the operator of this call. Thank you so much. Look forward to working with you. Okay, Ted, are you there?
I am. Thank you. All right. Thank you, Secretary Merrill. So hello, everybody. I'm sitting here with Deputy Secretary of the State Bates. At the office in Hartford. And so what we did is we put together some talking points that I'm going to go through, many of which were developed through questions that were submitted to us either from the leadership of ROVAC or the town clerks or from you individually. As the secretary said, I think it's prudent for us, no matter what happens, and as you must be aware, things change daily here at the state level, literally daily, and sometimes halfway through the day, in terms of the updates from medical professionals about what is happening and what our risks are. So even as we explore with the governor things regarding altering the primary date and things of that nature, as the secretary said, we just don't know. If we delay the primary for a month, that could be great, or it could mean that more people are sick. Either way, all of the protocols and things that we talk about now are going to be relevant whether or not the primary is held in April, or the primary is held in May, or the primary is held in the first week or so of June. All of this stuff, I think we still have to keep in mind as we move forward. So as we talk about some of this stuff, what I would ask you to do is to keep an open mind, keep your thinking hat on, but also think about, or if you take anything from this conference call, think that the stuff we talk about here, in my mind, is equally as relevant for April as it would be for May, as it would be for possibly June. So the first few things were polling place protocols. We got a lot of questions about polling place protocols, and what we're attempting to do is, because none of us here at the Secretary of State's office have a medical degree, we're trying to give to you the information that we are receiving from the Department of Public Health and also from the CDC regarding suggestions about how to make the polling place as safe as possible. You should have already received a few emails from us regarding polling place recommendations in terms of disinfecting polling booths and keeping your hands clean. And also, you should have received from us some instructions from the voting machine vendors, both IVS and LHS, about how to safely and effectively disinfect those machines as well. So I'm not really sure that we have any additional advice. Certainly, if the CDC or somebody comes down with with some additional advice, we will pass that along to you, but I would urge you to look at the information that you already have regarding those issues. The second issue is staffing. We got a lot of questions about staffing. And what I would urge you to do there is that there's a couple of things in play here. The first is that we all have emergency plans, and within those emergency plans, particularly ours at the state level, it calls for having an additional pool of poll workers that can be replacements. So we have that. But I would also want to remind, because I believe that somebody had brought it up, about combining polling place duties. And the lucky thing about this election, it is the presidential preference primary. And so I would remind you to take a look at that statute, and I reproduced some of that in a recent email that I sent to all registrars and town clerks. But the lucky thing is that within that presidential preference primary statute, it already allows us to combine and to reduce our number of polling place officials. You can share moderators. You can have one machine tender for multiple machines. I'm not going to go through it all because we've already sent it to you in writing, but the good news is that combining our emergency plan, where we are required to have additional pools of poll workers together with the already existing statute that allows us to combine many of the duties within the polling place, I think you'll find some flexibility in there. I think the other thing that we sent out to you the first couple of days of this whole outbreak was the fact that it's so important for you guys to have deputies and assistant town clerks and deputy registrars of voters, and even go farther than that. Remember, the statute allows, particularly for registrars, to appoint as many assistant registrars as you need for a particular task. And so I've gotten a lot of questions about, well, what happens if I get sick and my deputy gets sick? Well, I would identify people locally that would be willing to be an assistant registrar for a particular task. And whether that task is simply being available in your office to collect voter registration cards at a deadline so that those people have effectively filed their card with you, or something of that nature, you know, all of those little things can help. So I would encourage you to think about those types of issues. Another question that we got is, what happens if my moderator or poll worker gets sick midday? Well, again, there is a statute regarding that. Again, the emergency plans do or should address those situations. And again, if somebody gets sick, the moderator, if it's not the moderator, can assign that duty to somebody else. And if it's the moderator, then there should be a backup pool of replacement moderators that you're able to draw from. Let's see. Somebody also asked about emergency absentee ballots. And these all fall under the sort of the guise of staffing issues. Whether or not, I guess this town particularly uses registrars to handle emergency absentee ballots. And again, I would encourage you to actually just even read the form, because there's many, many other individuals who can serve as the people that run the absentee ballot, the emergency absentee ballot back and forth. In addition to the registrars, certainly local police are listed as one, doctors and nurses, although they're probably quite busy at this point, but even family members can do that as well. So just take even a look at the application. We'll give you a complete list of the people that can actually accomplish that task. Polling locations. So I know the secretary has been in constant contact with the governor's office regarding the closure of schools and whether or not schools could still be accessible as polling places. So we are fully aware that probably, and it's probably a low estimate, that 80% of our polling places in Connecticut are schools. So we do that. We do know that. Whether or not schools could be used in collaboration, the first thing that I would do if I were you locally is to contact your superintendent of schools to find out exactly what the limitations are on those schools. Any feedback that you can get for us regarding those limitations, because again, remember that each town or each group of towns has its own local school district, has its own local board of education, and in many cases has its own superintendent. So I know that the state board of education is giving some guidance, And I know that the governor has actually effectively closed the schools for at least a few weeks. But what is unclear is whether or not with that, the localities are putting any additional barriers up for polling places. So any information you could give to us about that will help us as we continue to have a conversation with the governor about if we need to take any action here at the state level to ensure that those polling places are available. And again, remember, we're talking about whether that be April, May, June, et cetera. But if for whatever reason your town is one of those lucky towns that has not been affected with that, and maybe there aren't restrictions, we would also advise you, and I know, again, we put this in one of our emails to you, to get familiar with your reverse 911 system, because the most important thing, as you guys know, with any polling place move is whether or not we can advise the individuals who are supposed to use that polling place where they're supposed to go. And many towns have different individuals who are supposed to be administering the reverse 911. In the smaller towns, it may be the first selectman. So I would encourage you locally to get familiar with that, to know who to contact in the case that polling places do need to be moved at the very last minute, in an effective way to be able to notify the general public. Another question we had was about ballots and how many to order. So what my advice on this is that I would go ahead and place an order with your printers as if we're having the April primary. We will not make you throw those ballots out should we move the primary to some other date. We realize that there will be a date on the top of it that says April, but we'll still use those same ballots. I know that in terms of our orders, we have told you that that we expect a higher than normal absentee ballot turnout, so you might want to anticipate that with your printers. But also, to the extent that you get a really high absentee ballot turnout, then of course we would allow you to start dipping into the polling place ballots to use those as opposed to the absentee ballots should that become necessary. One of the other bigger topics is that we've gotten questions about is sort of specialized balloting, supervised absentee balloting. We understand that the governor has issued an executive order that says that convalescent homes are basically under quarantine. We do know that. We're actively working with him to see whether or not we need to suspend the supervised balloting statute to allow those individuals to simply vote by absentee ballot like anybody else, or whether or not his existing executive order is sufficient enough to allow that. So, again, we are working on that. We do know that that's an issue that we need to deal with. Again, regular absentee balloting, we've heard from the town clerks and from the registrars about the difficulties in simply trying to implement a pure vote by mail for any type of primary on the fly. We do understand that. So again, we're working with the governor, with the legislature, and also we would anticipate reaching back out to the town clerks and the registrars regarding whether or not any regular absentee balloting changes are necessary. And so those are really the topics that came to you, that came to us from you. There were a couple of other topics that came to us literally just prior to this conference call. So what we will anticipate doing is that sooner rather than later after this conference call, and it may be later on today or it may be tomorrow morning, there'll be another email that comes out from us with some questions and answers that we may not have gotten on the list here for the conference call, and also some more detailed information, as much up-to-date detailed information we can give you from the CDC and from Department of Homeland Security regarding the coronavirus. More specifically, from the Department of Homeland Security, please be careful. They're finding that there's a lot of phishing expeditions and also some fake charities and other things that if you click on those links in this unfortunate time, people are trying to take advantage of that. And so we have to remain vigilant even about our cybersecurity as we try to move through this this health crisis. So again, rest assured, if you did not hear your question, it's likely to be in a follow-up email that we send after this conference call. So with that, I know I have an occasion to talk fast. So if you have a question or if you didn't get something, you want me to repeat it, that's fine. But I think at this point, we can go ahead and open it up for some questions or some comments from you all. And again, please keep in mind that as we move forward, we're just asking you guys to have an open hand, an open mind, to remain as flexible as we're trying to be with this. And it's new territory for everybody, so we may not have an answer for you. And if not, then we'll try to get one. We just want to make sure that everybody is safe and that we try to make this work as effectively as possible. So with that, I guess we can open it up for questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session of today's conference. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. If you need to withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. This will take a few moments for the questions to come through. Please stand by. Question comes from Sheila. Again, you only need to record your name, just your name. Thank you. Sheila, your line is open. You may proceed.
Okay, thank you. It's Sheila Sedlak, town of Winchester, and my big concern for the primary is the number of ballots I may need. I don't know whether we're a town of 6,000 voters, and I don't know whether to cut that in half. I can't visualize ordering 3,000 ballots. What is everybody else doing?
So thanks, Sheila, for that. So what I think that we have been recommending, or what I think I would recommend to you is, first, I would go ahead and look back at your stats for the presidential preference primaries that have happened in the past. And I think that probably the most relevant one would be, I think it was, 4 years ago? Yeah, 4 years ago when we kind of had the open seat and go from there.
Right.
What I would do is that if you're concerned about it, I would probably bump up your absentee ballot count a little bit. But keep in mind, the other thing is that, again, it's a moving target, and I understand that you guys have to put in orders probably sooner rather than later. But, as we all watch, not only do we have to watch the coronavirus, but we also have to watch what's happening with the presidential preference primaries, and perhaps you can get some feedback from there. I know that there's a few presidential preference primaries coming about today. You know, and we'll see what the reaction of the candidates are, and you know, you can go from there as well.
Our next question comes from Renee Waldron. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi there. We are one of those lucky towns that we do not use schools. We have 4 polling places and their fire departments. My question is whether we can, and maybe this is an answer I should already know, but can we reduce, consolidate, and do one polling place? We have a library community center that would be sufficient for space, and I'm worried about number of workers, being able to get a number of workers.
So that's a great question. So there's a couple of different answers to that. One is legal and one is practical. The first one is that there is a statute that requires us to use the same polling places for a primary as we do an election. So generally speaking, unless, you know, something emergent happens, you're supposed to use the same polling places for a primary as you do an election. But the other two considerations are, remember that you are already allowed to reduce the number of poll workers at each polling place. And I think I did a count, and I think if you go by the presidential preference primary statute, I think you can get it as low as 4, I think, per polling place. And the other thing is that combining polling places, if we actually really do take a step back and think about it, would be contrary to any public health advice that we have received thus far, meaning spreading the people out rather than forcing them all into one polling place would be better advisable. So that's what I can give you at this point.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carol Harley. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi. I was going to ask the same question about combining polling places, which you just answered. But in addition to that question, we were told today that one of our polling places, the community center, will no longer be able to use because it's going to be a shelter in the coming weeks. I'm not sure about the particulars. We just had that information given to us this morning. So how would we proceed in that case when we're being told absolutely not being able to use one of our bigger polling places?
Sure, that's a great question. So I would label that one as an emergency situation where your polling place becomes unavailable. And in that case, what you'd need to do is find an alternative polling place within that district or close to the border of that district, and then decide which way you're going to notify those individuals. Given that you know now, you could probably get away with a postcard. But if for some reason the decision has to be made closer, then again, you might need to use some type of public notification system that your town has.
Okay. And just to follow up, there really aren't any other locations that are near there. I mean, we don't have a lot. We're pretty much 99% residential in this town. So we would have to probably have it combined with another polling location. And is that possible? Because they just don't exist.
Right. So, again, in that situation, you know, if you refer to the statute that talks about emergency polling places becoming unusable, the statute does say that you're supposed to pick a polling place in a district that is close
okay.
to the other one. So if there isn't, and the closest one would be using a separate room in an existing building, then that's what you got to do. But just take a look. It's 9-168 and 169. That's not a special procedure. That's just a procedure you would use if you found out that the pipe burst in that same polling place.
Okay. And one last part. Two of our six polling places are at churches. What if they decide that they don't want us in there? Then this is just worst-case scenario.
Right. So I would start conversations with them now.
Okay.
And just see, and I know, and if, for instance, they're worried about, disinfecting the place afterwards or whatever, those are things that you can let us know that can be also incorporated into our conversations with the governor in case that there's additional funding that can be had to help the municipalities do those types of things.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Pam Thurl. Just a reminder, you only need to record your name, just your name. Thank you. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Yes, my question is that many of us, if we're going to be doing as many absentees as you're suggesting or has been suggested in the past, we will not have enough supplies, and I know that you guys are out. So what are we going to do about that?
Oh, that's a great question. Thank you so much for reminding me to, because I promised the staff I would say that. So what we're doing right now is that you will, in the coming days, get massive supplies of absentee ballots from us because we are printing pretty much every form brand new, and they're going to come directly drop ship from the printer. So you'll probably have more than you need or ever want from us. But that's the way that we're going to have to operate going forward, given the new building and our storage requirements. But rest assured, we know that, and I know that, some of you have been very diligent about requesting supplies from us, and just know that we have those on record and that we've put massive orders into the printers, and I know that they are beginning to ship those very, very soon, and we're going to start with the common sets of absentee ballots, for civilians, and then we'll ratchet it up for the more uncommon forms as they come out. So we've prioritized that as well.
Thank you.
Yep.
Next question comes from Stacy Gravino. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi, Ted. It's Stacy from East Haven. My question was the same thing because I had placed an order a couple of times for inner envelopes that we really need. So if it's coming in the near future, then I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, no, rest assured it is. I was just talking with my staff about that today. We have the orders, they are printing, and they're going to start rolling out the deliveries as they print. So they're not going to wait for a full order for a town. So you may be getting them sort of piecemeal, but you're going to start to get them very soon.
Okay, perfect.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from Walker. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Is that me?
Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi, this is Pat from Oka, Nigerian. I was calling in regard to something different. Our town hall just said a state of emergency, and the town hall is closed to the public. So they do have bare people in there. My question is there any way we can access the CVLS to enter from our own computers and not have to go to the town hall, because this is going to be very difficult now?
Yeah, great. That's a great question. So that is something that we are looking into, but it does not look as though we would be able to do that. We don't even have the capacity to do that here. It is a very lockdown tight system, and there's a lot of protocols. We are exploring it with Department of Information Technologies, but it does not look like at this point we will be able to do that remotely. My recommendation would be to make sure that at least those cards are being stamped in so that you know that they're received in a timely manner, and then you know, go from there. But unfortunately, it does not look like we'd be able to accommodate that for all the towns.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Leah Eligdatis. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi, Ted. I had two questions. One was a follow-up on the ballot supplies, and I want to know if you are shipping them to everyone or we need to make a specific order for more supplies. That's number one. And number two, have you considered the impact of the governor's executive order that's banning groups of, you know, gatherings of groups of 50 or more persons until April 30th, which could easily impact our polling places, particularly in the larger cities. But even in my small town, we could get to 50 in one room, either in the room or in the line. And certainly the big cities will have a bigger problem in that regard.
Yeah, so the first answer is, yeah, we are shipping supplies to each and every town, all 169. So there is no need to do that. In fact, the number of supplies for our initial shipment to you is the number of supplies you used in the 2016 presidential election plus 50%. So that's why I say you'll be able to probably build a small house with the supplies that we are giving you. The second question, yes, all of those considerations, the governor's executive order about 50 people, the federal government's order about 10 people, all of those things are into play as we move forward, trying to determine the best course of action to keep everybody safe. So, yes, all of those discussions are being had between the secretary and the governor and executive staff members here on a probably, I would say, multi-hourly basis each day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Susan Horvath. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Oh, my question's been answered a couple of times, so thank you.
All right. Our next question comes from Karen Cortez. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi. We've been notified by our town that they may have difficulty procuring sanitation supplies in adequate amount for us to use at the primary. What's the state doing to get us hand sanitizer and alcohol wipes for our equipment.
State officials.
Yeah, I mean we're doing the same thing that you're doing. We're in touch with our state officials, our Department of Public Health, to see if that stuff is anything that we would have availability for. So you should continue to try to procure at the local level as well.
And if we cannot get it, what should we do?
Well, I know that there are recipes online to make your own hand sanitizer.
Okay. If you can find rubbing alcohol at the store, let me know. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Dana McFeed. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi, Ted. Question. What if Bernie Sanders, and this is a very good possibility, withdraws before our primary, and I think that would just remain Tulsi Gabbard, and say, for instance, she decides in the best interest of the people showing up at the polls. Obviously, she does have no chance either. And then, of course, the two on the Republican side are really just token candidates. Is there a possibility that we could actually, based on the fact that, again, if Sanders was to withdraw, that we could just cancel the primary completely even after the ballots were printed?
So great question. You're going to get a two-prong answer, a little bit from me and a little bit from the deputy secretary. So the first thing is from me is it depends. You guys all know from the calendars that we've sent out that March 3rd is the final day. If the primary were to be held in April, that individuals can withdraw and take their name off the ballot. However, if the primary is pushed to a different day, then of course that date slides as well. So the answer is, it's a great question, but at this point, it's far too much of a hypothetical to answer directly, but I know that the deputy has some thoughts as well.
No, not too much more in addition to what Ted said, except, watch how things go in other states, watch how the race unfolds, and that could mean that perhaps turnout levels, you know, would not be as large as they might be for a very contested primary. But even so, you know, I think preparation is the watchword. So expect that there will be an election. Expect, to have decent turnout. But, you know, use your common sense as you watch the race unfold.
Yeah, but again, what I'm saying is, do you have the ability to cancel it if Bernie Sanders were to withdraw and Tulsi Gabbard withdraws and the other two? Say, for instance, you know, everybody decided, you know, because the race is pretty much settled already, if they withdrew and I could see them withdrawing in the interest of safety, can we actually cancel it based on that?
Yeah, thanks. That's a lot of hypotheticals, and what we're doing right now is working from the facts and taking it day by day. So let's all stay tuned to the unfolding situation, but we have to plan for as if there's an actual election happening. And as the secretary said, we have to plan for an April 28th date, but keeping in touch with each other very closely as we move forward as to if that will remain.
Our next question comes from Andrew Scott. Just a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 and record only your name. Thank you.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes, I have a question regarding the canvas. This year we are to start sending out just for a few days on April 29th after the primary. In my situation, my letters are all generated and envelopes stuffed and basically just about ready to go in the mail. So what happens if the primary date changes? What has to change?
That's a great question. Thank you very much for asking that, and I applaud you for having your stuff ready to go. So, for instance, if the primary, let's just say that the primary stays as it is, then our instructions would say that you would drop all of that stuff in the mail on the primary day or the day after. If for whatever reason the primary gets postponed, your work is not all for naught. And what we would do is we would advise you to actually send those letters out prior to, depending upon exactly when the date would be. So we do have contingency plans in place for that. So be on the lookout, particularly if the primary date gets slid. That advice will come out to come out from us almost immediately to let you know what to do.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Gail Farming. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi. Can town clerks that are elected be an assistant registrar on the day of the primary if needed?
That's a very good question. What I will say off the top of my head is that I don't think so, because there is the statute 9-210, which talks about a town clerk not being a registrar, a registrar not being a town clerk, et cetera. So that's what I would say off the top of my head. I mean, I will certainly look into that a little more for you, but my knee-jerk reaction is that no, there couldn't be a crossover because of 9-210.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Anna Ponsniak. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Ted, as you know, most of the town clerks order their ballots from Adkins, and Cliff has been informing us that he doesn't have the paper supplies because he orders those paper in 6 weeks in advance, and his other concern is that he uses outside technicians for service calls, and if they're not available, then production will come completely to a stop for ballots. Is there any kind of protocol on what we should be doing if that is to happen, if we can't get ballots? And then as a follow-up to that with another uncertainty is if the post office was to have any stoppages or reduce their deliveries, how do we plan for ballots that are not coming back to town hall?
So the first one would be that not so much worry about now. Is Cliff, when you say that, is Cliff worried about the particular paper, as in the yellow paper, or I'm not sure because he has not conveyed that concern to us.
He has not said what the color of the paper is. He just said he did not have sufficient paper. So are you saying, like, if we would be flip flopping our officials, if that was what the majority of the ballots we ordered last time, and switch that over to absentees for color-wise? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, if that's the problem, I have no problem worrying about or having our absentees be white. I mean, we do that just simply so that we could more readily identify them and sort them, so I don't have a problem with that. The other thing that I would do is I would contact LHS, because remember, there are other printer, and they're not located in Connecticut. The printer that they use is located elsewhere, and so they may have a better source of supplies. So I would ask them as well about that. But in terms of the post office, the deputy has a response to that as well.
Right. So thank you, Anna. And Scott Bates here. I was on the phone with the Department of Homeland Security yesterday. This came up, and, you know, so far business as usual, and several states that do vote by mail are not having problems, but it's something that everybody's watching, and you know, we'll share with that information with you as we get it from DHS or any federal officials.
Okay, thank you very much.
Sure.
This question comes from David Smith. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Yeah, hi, gang. Listen, the sanitizer portion of the discussion was kind of glossed over pretty quickly and very optimistically. And candidly, down here in southwestern Connecticut, the demand for wipes and for sanitizers and so forth, just crazy. And, Ted, if you're making 50-gallon drums of sanitizer, we'd love to have one. But I'm not so sure that that's going to happen on an individual basis, and it certainly is in need. Suggestions and any way that you all can help us.
Again, I'll repeat that. You know, we are working with Department of Public Health in our suppliers to see if we have any access to it, but you should also be doing that locally. That's all I can say about it.
I can also let you know that we're on the governor's unified command call every day, which has every state agency on it. And as important issues are developing, the whole of state government focuses on what that issue is. So right now, the sanitizer to the localities for election purposes may not be on the agenda, but it sure will be as we get closer to that date. So we're just trying to, the state's trying to knock down the challenges as they come, and it's important that you pointed that out, so thank you.
Those are some big challenges, to be sure. Sanitizers, wipes, and gloves, and they are just unavailable anyplace, online as well as in the local stores.
This is a priority for, I know the secretary's talked with the governor, and, you know, we're in touch with fellow state agencies, so as I said, as we get closer to elections, everybody recognizes that the smooth and efficient and safe conduct of elections is a top state priority. So thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dan Rosenthal. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi. Thank you. This is Dan Rosenthal, first electman from Newtown. I've listened to the whole call. I appreciate the effort that's gone into it and the predicament that we find ourselves. But frankly, this flies in the face of all the guidance that's coming from Washington, from our own governor. Most of the decisions that have to be made on this have to be done within the next two and a half weeks. So, you know, I don't see the wisdom in saying full steam ahead. To wait until, you know, you're right, we don't know where this is going to go, but we're going to know a whole lot more in 30 days than we know right now. So this is not going to hold up to public scrutiny. You know that it won't, and you ultimately will have to cave and move it. So why not show the leadership now and do it? Thank you.
Well, thank you, First Electman, for that statement. And I think, as we stated at the beginning of this, this is all about information sharing. It's about preparation. It's about making sure every locality is doing what it can. And as stated, we're very much in touch with the governor's office and also federal authorities. So, you know, that's the watchword here, is that the purpose of all this is to work together to overcome a common obstacle. So thank you for your comment.
Our next question comes from Jonathan. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Yeah, good afternoon to the Deputy Secretary Bates and Theodore Bromley. My question is one of the things that have come up was absentee ballot voting. And I was thinking of what could be a mechanism that we could use to kind of be able to, whether we have to push the election forward, cancel it, whatever the case may be, what if the state would be able to set, to maybe send via email, regular mail, all the registered voters absentee ballot applications and kind of encourage everyone to vote that way, sort of utilizing an emergency passage of saying, you know, you don't have to meet these guidelines to vote absentee. That would sort of get everyone maybe feeling a lot more comfortable instead of going to the polling place. That's one particular area. And then second, if that were to happen, I know that there might be a little bit of strain on town clerk's offices, but that's more of a manning issue and how we would handle the volume of applications as opposed to dealing with polling places, with safety measures of cleaning everything and having all the materials necessary to do that. So I guess my overall question is, why can't we just try to encourage an absentee ballot voting mechanism as the primary way to vote for this particular election due to the circumstances?
So thank you. That's a great question. So I think there's some legal issues and there's also some practical issues. I think as everybody's aware, our absentee ballot is an excuse or a reasoned absentee ballot structure. It's contained both in the Constitution of Connecticut as well as state statute. And although the governor may have certain authorities to suspend certain statutes, I know of no authority he has to suspend the Constitution itself. And the second thing is, as I talked about in the beginning of the call, is that we are well aware from the town clerks and also from the registrars that trying to implement some massive vote-by-mail project on the fly or within 6 weeks would certainly almost be impossible. And so we're well aware of those types of things. We're trying to find some type of solution that would work for everybody so that we can keep people safe, but also to enable an efficient and fair administration of the election. So, those are discussions we have, again, on a daily basis, including the governor, including the attorney general, and but there are also practical things involved. So, thanks.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Next question comes from Joel Marcy. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a quick question, and I've been looking over the application for absentee ballot, and I just heard an answer to the governor's authority to possibly deal with statutory issue but not constitutional issues. So my question is quite simple. If we were to get the absentee ballots early from Atkins or so, can we send them out immediately, or do we absolutely have to wait the 21 days?
So right now, we would have to wait for the 21 days, which would be April 7th, if we have the April 28th primary. We could approach the governor, and that is a very good suggestion. We will write that down to see whether or not that statute could be suspended and allow absentee ballots to go out a bit earlier. That's a very good point. So we will make note of that and possibly include that in our ongoing discussions with him. So thanks for that point.
Great. Thank you now.
Our next question comes from Cheryl Griss and is open. You may proceed.
Yes, good afternoon, Ted and Deputy Bates. Mine has to do with the fact that absentee ballot might be a choice a lot of people might decide on doing to avoid the polls. Is it possible to get some kind of a notice out to make sure that people request their absentee ballot early, where to find those forms, so that they can get them into us as early as possible, so it'll make it easier for us to get them out on time to them, that they know they can't wait to the last minute to do that? And second part, if because of the absentee ballot increase possibility, is there any possibility of the day being extended for which absentee ballots can be accepted after the close of the election?
Very good question. So the first, in terms of our sort of voter outreach campaign, those are all things that we are considering. We have to take a very measured approach when we sort of communicate with the public, so that the message is clear, so that there's no confusion and no anxiety about the process. But that is a very good point to communicate locally early. Just like the caller before, which was talking about suspending the 21 days, we would also need some type of action to suspend when absentee ballots could become available. And I would have to look to see whether or not that's even in the Constitution. And if it is, then of course we wouldn't be able to do that. But it's a very good point that we will take a look at to see whether or not we need to extend that received by date. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we'll take two more questions, please.
Okay. Our next question comes from Berkeley. Your line is now open.
Hi. Yeah. We have an interesting situation that I think other towns also have, where we have two different districts that vote in the same location. And when we were talking about reducing staff, is it possible for staff to be shared between the two districts and or between the two parties?
So between the two districts, probably not as much, but between the parties, yes. Again, That statute regarding the presidential preference primary does allow some sharing between the parties, particularly the moderator. So you only need one moderator for both party primaries. So I would go ahead and take a look at that, and I think you can trim your staff by a great deal. Again, I think I did a count the other day, and I think it comes down to I think essentially you only need four people. But yes, I do believe that's possible. And what I'll do is I'll send when we send out the next message to everybody, since everybody seems to be curious about this, I'll cut and paste the statute for you all so you have it.
Okay, that would be great.
Our next question comes from Maureen Fronten. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Hello. I would like to know if we can if there's any way the ballots can be the same ballot for absentees in polling places and just all one district, so we're not having to divide it. So that way it'll be a lot easier to know. We won't have as many problems with how many ballots we're ordering for each due to the uncertainty of all these things.
Right. So I've talked with Cliff and I've talked with Atkins about this, and they're going to print as they did 4 years ago, which is the ballot will be the same for the town. I believe that's what they did 4 years ago. The only time that we absolutely need a distinction between ballots is when there is a congressional district in one of the towns, because the political parties do allocate their delegates by congressional districts, and so we will need totals by congressional districts for those, I think it's four or five or six towns out there that have that. And the printers know that as well. So, just like 4 years ago, we've advised the printers that they can do the same thing, and I communicated in writing to Cliff about that, so he's all on board.
Okay. So we'll only need one number of ballots for the whole town?
If you don't have a congressional district, you can certainly do that. So.
Okay, can we use the same ones for absentees in polling places?
Where do you count your absentees?
Central counting.
Okay. Well, then, yeah, you'll have a separate total anyways.
Right. So we don't have to have them different. We could do them all the same. And that way, if there is a run on the absentees, like we probably will have,
yeah.
I don't want to order enough for, like, double for both kinds. Because this is
right.
A lot of
it. No, I understand. And that's, I think I sort of alluded to that when I was talking to Anna as well. So.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so I'm going to hand it back off. If we could please hand it back off to Secretary Merrill, please.
Yes, can you all hear me now? Ooh.
Yeah, we're good.
Oh, okay. Couldn't figure out if I was still on mute. Yes, I just wanted to let you all know I've listened to the entire conversation, and as I thought, there were lots of good questions and some great ideas that we will take back and make sure we're taking care of all the finer details should anything happen. I hear the concern, particularly from the first selectman, about, you know, making a decision about all this. As you all know, you handle elections, and you know how critical it is to be prepared for all this. So I still think one way or another, we have to be ready in case we decide to go forward on April 28th. No one but the governor can make this call. I can make recommendations, and I certainly have heard a lot of good ones today. So I will take this all into the meetings we're having when we try to make these final decisions. But as I said at the beginning, there's no easy answer to any of this. Even if we delay the election, it still has to go on. And so you are the ones on the front lines on that. So I would say if you happen to be in line to ask a question and didn't get there, communicate with Sue Larson and Rovac, Anna Posniak, and we will be having further discussions with them as well. I think the important thing is to keep the communication open, and if any problems come up at all, please let us know. We will try to do everything we can to solve every problem. We may not have hand sanitizer, I have to tell you, but we'll do our best. So thank you all for everything you're doing out there, and be well, be safe, and let's do the best we can for the people of the state.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we're all set to sign off. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, everyone.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may all disconnect at this time.